But now it's video games and Deadpool and Netflix and Deadpool, various movie trailers and Deadpool, different TV shows and Deadpool. I mean, it's just all this stuff in Deadpool.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hey, Ted. It's Tuesday this week for episode 49. So how are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, doing all right. Let's welcome everybody to the latest in Trailer Junkies land. And with Thanksgiving and all the festivities surrounding that, we are doing it earlier in the week instead of our typical Friday.
That's right. It feels like a Friday, though, because the kids are off tomorrow. I'm going to take them to work with me. There were a bunch of kids at work today, so I think there are going to be more children in my office than grown-ups.
Oh, that'll be good. So a lot will get done tomorrow.
Well, I'll get a lot done.
Yeah.
In case my boss listens to the podcast, but I don't think she does.
So other than everybody being off and all this stuff and going to work, anything else going on this week? I know it's a short week since our last recording.
I know. It feels like just yesterday. Not much is going on. I finally, I finished up my week-long festivities, and we capped off my birthday week with a beautiful carrot cake that Anne and the kids got, and we enjoyed it with Frank and Barbara.
Yeah, nice. I mean, I know you celebrate what? For this birthday, it was about a three-week celebration, or?
It'll feel like that because this is 3 weeks we're talking about it. But yeah, it was a little over a week because, you know, hey, I had to give Mikey his space. You know, he had his birthday party and we went up to you guys for that. And, you know, I didn't want to encroach on his celebration.
There you go. Hey, so I have like beer news. So
okay,
before I get into the beer news, let's crack our beers.
Okay, so my beer is a Prankster Belgian-style golden ale by North Coast Brewing Company. So part of the birthday celebration was a little four-pack from Frank.
Nice.
Of this stuff, and I was like, sweet, I have a beer for the podcast.
Nice. So it was early on when we started doing the beer that I did a Prankster.
I think you like the Belgian-style beers, so.
I do. So I brewed a Russian Imperial Stout today, and yesterday I was at Valley Brewers in Solvang, and Sandy and Chris there always treat me well when I go in and everything, and they get all my recipes ready. I shoot them an email. I say, get this together, and when I show up, it's together, and you know, in and out, no muss, no fuss. And yesterday while I was there, I got a Third Window Brewing out of Santa Barbara, California, and this too is a Russian Imperial Stout. Salusa Secundus.
Wow, how small of a batch is that?
I don't know. It looks pretty select. It has a 2018, 16.9 fluid ounces, so that's probably what an imperial pint. 8.5% ABV, and it's an imperial stout with 24 blackbirds coca nibs.
Oh!
And Dune Coffee Roasters coffee beans.
That's right up my alley. Coffee nibs? I mean,
cocoa nibs.
What? Coca nibs and coffee? Amazing. I can taste it over the Skype.
You'll probably smell my breath through the microphone. But the thing about it though is, so it's 8.5 ABV, and then you're looking at the coffee, so when this is all done, I'll just be straight. All right. So well, hang on. Let me get a pour here.
Yep.
Oh, man. It's like creamy. I almost wish like beer didn't have to be had all at once because I'd love to save this like and enjoy it even more tomorrow. But
I think you could. That one doesn't even look like it had much carbonation in it at all. So
yeah, no, it's got a good head to it.
I mean, it's got a good head, but it's that thick, creamy head. It's not a...
Oh my God, is it so good. Wow.
Is there a network of home brews like you could get on? Like, of just like you brew one and you share it. And then there's got to be a way to do that.
Oh, like in, with shipping and all this stuff?
Well, I mean, just like if you make a big batch, you do a keg, right?
Yeah.
You brew a keg?
Well, there's the homebrew club, and people bring beers and they share and everything.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
Yeah.
There's got to be one around here.
Oh, there definitely is. Yeah, there's homebrew clubs all over the place. I thought you meant like something on the internet where everybody's mailing their beers all over. I don't know if I would do that, but getting back to, well, I got the Russian Imperial Stout recipe. Yeah. I also got a Dogfish Head 90-minute IPA clone, and I got a Scotch Heavy that myself and my father-in-law are going to brew this coming Saturday. So 'tis the season for big beers. They're all going to be like between 9 and 13%.
I still remember last year's Scotch, right? There was a
Scotch Ale
that went like, it went over on alcohol and...
Oh, no, that was, what was that? That was a Belgian Strong.
Oh.
Yeah, that was like 14%. It was ridiculous. So I discovered why my kegged beer would progressively get worse over time. So as I would make the, you know, my bottled beer was always so much better and my keg beer always started off good. And then over time, it would like progressively just get this weird off flavor and I couldn't figure it out. And a lot of people were having the same issues. Like we were talking about the beer club thing. And a lot of people are having the same issues. So there was a place in Santa Barbara where I would get my CO2 for the keg, and I don't want to name them or anything, but they're an ice place down there, and I think they stopped doing CO2 because they were selling, allegedly, they were selling, well, actually, I don't even think so. I think it was found out that they were selling non-food grade CO2 as food grade CO2. So all these places that were using them and stuff stopped using them and they got found out, whatever, that they were like, because it's more expensive for food grade. And now they don't do any CO2. And it's like all these people that I know, like homebrewing and stuff, like over time, we'd always get these weird flavors, you know? And
yeah.
And it's like this non-food grade CO2 had whatever contaminants from the atmosphere in it or whatever, pollutants and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it would just like start laying into the flavor and your beer would just taste like bizarre after a while.
Ugh.
And man, I've been trying to wrap my head around this for like a few years. I'm not exaggerating either. It's like, it's been a few years. I'm like, what is with this beer? It's like, it was good and now it tastes awful, you know? And
wow.
And I'm like, that's it. I'm bottling from now on. I'm going to stop kegging, you know, like forever.
Yeah.
But anyway, so like I have some in the keg now where I'm just like, this just aren't tasting that good. So before they get worse, I'll just have to drink them down, I guess. But
are they in charge of romaine lettuce too?
I don't know.
Did you hear about romaine lettuce today?
No, I didn't. What happened with romaine lettuce?
Throw away all your romaine lettuce. Apparently the E. coli is rampant in romaine lettuce.
Oh, it always is, you know.
Tons of people are getting sick. And I know it was like, before it was like, if you got the lettuce from Mexico or something like that. Now everybody's saying, forget it. Romaine lettuce has got to go. I met Anne for lunch today.
And she had romaine lettuce.
No, but we had put romaine lettuce in Audrey's lunch. And Anne was like, what are we going to do? It says throw out all your romaine lettuce. And I said, don't worry. Audrey, 9 times out of 10,
will throw away her romaine.
Does not eat her salad. And she brings it home and she's going to do it again. And I was like, oh God, please don't let her be the one time she eats her salad, you know?
Right.
And she got home and I'm like, unpack your lunch pail. And she did. And I was like, what are you putting in there? She goes, my salad. I was like, good. Give it to me. We'll throw it out right now.
Yeah, no doubt, man. You don't need that. Getting that sickness. But yeah. So anyway, I'm going to go to a place up in Santa Maria now that does gas and they do food, the food grade commercial stuff and, you know, for CO2 and everything. So my beer, I think my kegged beer will definitely be better. So for anybody who's a home brewer out there, take it from me for years of trying to figure out my keg that if you get weird flavors after a while, check your CO2 and make sure it's food grade.
Well, does it say it on the bottle? Is it like a certification or something?
No, you bring, like you get like a 10-pound bottle, a 5-pound bottle, whatever size that you have. I have 2 10-pounds, and as one goes, as one empties, I just rotate through and get it filled, so I never run out. But what I'll do is I just take it in and then they hook it up to their tanks. You know, they have like,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Big tanks,
huge right. tanks. And then, and they just, charge it and then, you know, they give it back to you. And then it's like $11 or something. Not expensive.
Oh, okay. So it's like my propane. I can hook up propane to it or something.
Yeah. Just like when you, well, when you bring your empty propane in and then they fill up your propane with the bigger tank, right?
Right, right.
There you go.
So I could use my propane tank for the CO2, right?
That would give you some off flavors, you know, and it might make you a little more flatulent. Explosive flatulence. Yeah. Just don't burp and like smoke, because you'll catch your neighbor on fire.
So the intruder, you want to jump into? Oh, no, no.
Well, let's read a review really quick.
Read a review. Bryce read last week's review, so you have the honors today.
Okay, so this was done October 21st, 2018, by Glenn Thinkstuff. Awesome pod! Exclamation, 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 exclamation. 5 stars. I really like this pod! Exclamation. Great, this guy likes shouting everything. Great conversation and chemistry! Exclamation. Something for everybody with these guys, exclamation. Subscribe now, exclamation.
I love it. I love the energy. I love the enthusiasm. Thanks. Thanks, Glenn Thinkstuff.
Yeah, he's very energetic. Much love going out there. All right. So we have a couple of news items. Last week I wanted to talk about one and we forgot. And then all of a sudden we have another similar news item. Two in a row. So the first one is A24 and Apple team up. And why don't you get into that a little bit?
Yeah. So it looked like A24 and Apple have joined forces to co-produce some films in the near future. But as typical per Apple, it seems like they aren't being very forthcoming with any of the details.
Of course.
It's a multi-picture, multi-year deal. But it doesn't specify how many years, how many movies, and how they're windowing the movie. Windowing, is that?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Common parlance. Yeah. So where they're gonna screen it first. A24 is typically a theatrical release, but I'm sure they're open to streaming only since Apple's footing the bill. Apple is trying hard to get into the game of content providing as content providers are now becoming distributors and everybody's self-streaming. Comcast, well, I don't know. This is kind of, do you have something to add to that? That's kind of like the broad strokes of it.
Yeah. So a couple things, probably fear speculation, and A24 has put out some pretty cool stuff in the past couple of years.
Since high quality, very high quality.
And they started, 2012, I think I was reading.
Yeah.
And in that short time, you know, you're looking at Academy Awards.
Every year they're nominated. Yeah.
Yeah. Small art house stuff. I mean, you know, awesome writing, very cool little art house that's doing big, competing with the big guys, right?
Yeah.
So the speculative fear that I have is that Apple's going to come in and dictate what they want and steal the creative energy away from A24. The second thing is it's created, you know, I'm afraid too, it's going to create more of a disparate streaming experience. So Netflix is putting out its original content, and you look at, you know, Hulu, or not, is it Hulu? Yeah, Hulu has original content.
Yep.
Amazon Prime has original content. Now Apple's going to have original content, and I think you're going to get to the point of like subscription fatigue. I mean, how many of these things can you subscribe to?
I talked to an executive at one of our all hands last week, and she predicted that like 5 to 7 is like the max subscription streaming services the normal layman will deal with.
5 to 7, that's a lot though.
That's a lot, right? It feels like a lot.
At $10 a pop, that's like $70. That's more than your cable bill.
I think people are, you know, approaching the fatigue stage already, and we're already going to have people bundling streaming services. It's going to happen sooner rather than later, and then the question is going to be how does that work, and how does that happen, and who needs to have the deal? You know, all these streaming services want the end user to be in charge of linking up with them. So bundling, it just puts another middleman in the mix. But if they can work a deal out, then that's where they would make their money. Comcast is also doing a streaming service.
Right.
Or at least talking about it in 2019. So they, too, are throwing their hat in the ring. AT&T/DirecTV, they're creating their own content, which we might get into in the Clio Awards a little bit, because they had some award-winning advertisements and marketing on one of their shows. So it is completely out there. I will say, if you're worried about A24, just remember this isn't Apple's first time with a major motion picture studio.
Who was the first?
Pixar.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So Pixar started with Steve Jobs on the board, and Apple was a big player in that space.
Excuse me real quick, though. Yeah. Wasn't that after Steve Jobs left Apple?
I think it might have been in the middle of people can correct me on it. Yeah, I know that he was with Apple, and I know that there was some Apple synergy going on there, but it might have been in the gap, because there were some gap years.
It was like something like he was with Apple and then he got canned, and then he started like Next Computers, and then sold that or something, and the proceeds from that then went into buying like Pixar, you know, whatever, and then like Pixar got like bought out by someone else. And John Lasseter kind of took that whole thing, and then he went back to Apple, and I don't know, probably from my Steve Jobs documentary watching. rough edits in my head.
Yeah.
But the one thing, though, like when we look at streaming, too, is it's not even just streaming services. You know, like if you look at Netflix as a streaming service, or you look at Amazon Prime as a streaming service, but you're also looking at network television as a streaming service, because there's CBS, and then if you're going to do shows on like AMC, if you wanted to like stream, I mean, AMC has a ton of streaming stuff, you know, Better Call Saul and all these, and those aren't necessarily services, because you log in, if you're going to stream it, that is, you log in with your TV provider, so a Comcast or a Cox or something.
Right.
So it's not even so much that you're looking at streaming services, but just you're being crushed under the weight of so many streaming channels that by the time you figure out, you know, and this goes back to the app that we talked about years ago, you know, and it's like, how do you, you know, HBO's another one, Showtime's another one, Stars, you know, I mean, like everything is streaming, which is awesome because all this content is like at your fingertips whenever you want it. But man, to find it all and to just have it so readily available, I mean, there's not enough time.
Well, I think there's two major companies that are trying to deal with that. Apple is, they have their TV app, where anytime you launch a streaming app on an Apple device, which I don't think you know, you don't know anything about that, right? Because it's mostly for mobile. But when I launched, I put Freeform on my phone for Bryce to watch a movie. And when I loaded that app on my phone, it asked if it wanted me to add that to the TV app within the main OS of the iPhone.
Yeah.
So it has its own kind of metrics that it's taking from what people are watching on your iPhone. And then Amazon does it too with their Fire line. So anything you can do on Fire will also be tracked. And it also, the Fire is a little more confusing. I think when you search for stuff on Fire, it's always trying to make you buy it or rent it or something like that. So I don't necessarily like that as much as the other apps that, like when you log into Netflix and you search for something and they don't have it, they'll give you comparable stuff, but they'll never direct you to go rent something somewhere else.
Well, and that's one of the things that is another concern too. So A24 might be putting out some really cool content now. They partner with Apple. Are they going to be like exclusive to Apple, to where I can't get it anywhere else? Like I can't get it on my Roku because I have to go through Apple. And then maybe I do that on iTunes through like, you know, my home theater PC or something.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they parse it out. I mean, there was a big fight between Apple and Amazon and even Google. You know, Google owns YouTube, so for a long time.
Well, that's true. Then you have Google Red and all that as well. I mean, it's another one.
Right? And oh, it was so funny. Last week I talked, you know, we're driving and I have one of my tech podcasts on, and my daughter, you know, piped up from the back seat. We were going to her swim meet on Sunday, and she was like, YouTube's going down. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. Let me turn this off, because she's a big YouTube fan. She has a lot of YouTubers that she follows.
Yeah.
And apparently I got from her that a lot of YouTubers are jumping off, taking breaks from being YouTubers and doing other ventures and doing other deals and trying to stream elsewhere. So she says, well, that means YouTube's going to go away. So her 12-year-old sensibilities think that YouTube is a failing company. And I'm like, you know, it's linked to Google, right? And Google owns it, and it's really one of their flagships that's never going to go away. I think, you know, I tried to give her a little possibility, and this is all speculation as always, but I said maybe the YouTubers were so used to this great cash cow of getting these huge checks from YouTube, and now YouTube has to pay out all these people for content, and they're producing their own content as well. Cobra Kai, you know, all these shows.
Right.
So if they scale back and they say, well, we're not going to pay you as much, or we're not going to redirect audiences to you because we have our own shows to redirect our, you know, viewers to, then you aren't going to get as big a check because we haven't redirected people to you. And I guess some YouTubers could say they're getting throttled, they're getting choked out of the equation. But if you have your own content that you've paid to produce as a streaming service, why wouldn't you push viewers to it? It doesn't make any sense to push viewers to somebody who is just getting another check for distracting your viewers that came to your platform.
Well, in YouTube, I mean, for all intents and purpose, there's so many, well, I should say so many, but there's a lot of YouTube, well, photography podcasts that do like video type stuff on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I mean, YouTube, for what it's worth, is a hosting platform for video, really. And Google has the corner on search. And YouTube is awesome for search because you have the regular search that's like the entire internet set that's cataloged. And then you have like video search, which is their own stuff. It's the movie industry. It's movie trailers that I'd say 99% of our movie trailers are viewed through YouTube. And then you have all the people hosting their stuff on YouTube. Even if they go somewhere else and they do, and you know, whether that's Vimeo or some other one, they're still going to put their content into YouTube because, I mean, that's where the eyeballs are.
Yeah.
You know, and why would you not go where people are watching and people are tuned into, because it's just such a ubiquitous name? And I don't think it's going away.
It's definitely not going away. I just thought it was interesting that as a fan, YouTube is definitely the elephant in the blind man. I don't know if you're familiar with the fable.
Yeah.
You know, for us, we've searched for stuff. You know, I need to fix something on my car. I go to YouTube. You know what I mean? I need to figure out how to do something on the computer. I go to YouTube. So we're very utilitarian YouTube users.
Oh, yeah. Replace my garage door springs with YouTube.
See? But Audrey is a YouTuber fan where she likes these people that put together
personalities.
Yeah, they put together their brand. They put their brand on YouTube. And then from YouTube, their personal brand of this personality expands into the podcast space. It expands into, you know, their own website. It expands into lines of clothing. You know, it's everywhere.
Yeah. And that's a good point, I think, that she's making, is maybe as a personality platform, YouTube might scale back. But I think as far as, like you said, I mean, you know, if I got to figure out how to do something in Lightroom with HDR and I just watch like a quick 5-minute clip on YouTube, you know, or whatever it is, I mean, you go to YouTube.
Yeah.
Because so many people have so much content, and I don't care about the guy's stupid jokes. Just tell me what buttons to click, because I want to make this picture look nice, you know?
Right.
Like, I'm not going to follow you as a fan, because you're kind of boring and dull, and your jokes fall flat.
Ouch.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just making a general statement. I mean, the people are saying the same thing. They're like, right now, they're like, yeah, Jim, same to you. Okay, before we get too far down this rabbit hole, though.
Yep.
So A24 and Apple have partnered. Netflix and Paramount have partnered. And I don't think that's as big of a story, though. What do you say?
I think it's a big story. I think it's the beginning. It's another multi-year deal. I don't think they said how many years, but they did say it's $50 million or something like that. And to me, that sounded like a really small drop in the bucket as far as the money and the market share that Netflix has on the market. But it does kind of keep Netflix's cred in the Hollywood space, you know, beyond their own private production stuff, which is huge and growing. What, $8 billion worth of production stuff this year or next year or something like that? It's huge. So $50 million to Paramount to do, you know, a few movies over the next few years. I think it's just the Paramount name. It's keeping that relationship open and a avenue to theatrical release and an avenue through, you know, just a bigger distribution.
Yeah. And the reason why I said it's probably not that big of a story, or maybe as big of a story, is because Paramount's already been feeding Netflix with shows. You know, I mean, probably pre of this partnership.
Well, I think with Disney jumping out of the Netflix game, I think it's more of a PR thing for Netflix to say, hey, we still have the credibility. We still have the support of the industry.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's so much built on what Wall Street wants Netflix to be. So I think if they have Paramount in their pocket and, you know, they're sharing stuff with them, then it kind of makes everything copacetic. Not everybody's jumping ship like Disney.
And that could shift in the type of audience and the content, of course, because Disney, when you hear the name Disney, it brings with it a certain notion as to the type of content you're going to be expecting. Family-oriented. No, I'm serious, though. Family-oriented, friendly, you know, probably maybe at its worst, PG-13, if it's, you know, maybe...
If it's Marvel, if it's Lucas, that is PG-13, but it can still be Disney.
Yeah.
How does Fox hit you as a brand?
How does Fox hit me as far as, like, 20th Century Fox?
Well, just if you saw Fox... You know, you see Disney, you see the castle in front of a movie, you know what you're going to get, right?
You know, Fox is a tough one, though, because am I looking at, I mean, like, if you think about it, they have a lot of arms, right? You have sports, Fox Sports, you have their news, well, if you want to call it news, but they have their propaganda.
They're keeping that.
Yeah. And then you're looking at, like, local affiliates, and then you're looking at their 21st century, 20th century Fox, like, movies and things.
The feature films.
The feature films. So they have a lot more arms, I think, than other...
Just if you saw the feature film, if you saw that marquee coming up, there's a little less brand definition in the Fox name, right? You could see anything from a horror flick to a family flick.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
It all comfortably fits in that space. So I think that makes sense to keep that going, you know, in its own little way. And then you have Hulu, which also doesn't really have a brand identity.
Yeah, but they've also partnered with all the networks, though, right? Like ABC, NBC, CBS.
Right. So they're kind of ubiquitous. They kind of have a broad brand, and they're kind of like a fun brand, too. So I think you're definitely right about Disney kind of being a brand champion. Like, it holds its brand such well. I think HBO is very similar. Like, you don't necessarily know what you're going to get. Well, I think HBO is the adult version of Disney, right? It's like, you know, you're going to see something that's probably going to be R-rated, but it's going to be high quality.
Oh, high quality language and nudity.
but classy.
Oh, no, absolutely. You know, I read it for the articles. I promise. No, I think what I meant, though, when I said there's going to be a shift in audience possibly is that, you know, you go to if I get on my kids' Netflix, there's like tons of Disney stuff. There's tons of animation and, you know, just family programming and child-friendly programming, kid-friendly programming. But partnering with Paramount now, you're going to have, I think, a lot more like adult content. And when I say adult, I don't mean porn or anything, but, you know, adult content in that, you know, just adult themed stuff, you know, like,
right.
You know, maybe it's going to, whatever the story is, you know, if it's family, it's going to be like divorced families and crazy soap opera-y stuff and stuff that kids just aren't into, you know, and won't be into. So you're probably still going to have like the kids shows, like, you know, PJ Mask and Dinosaur Train and all that kind of stuff, whatever, you know, and what's the other one? Dino Trucks and all the stuff. But the Disney stuff, yeah, that stuff will go away. But I think partnering with Paramount, though, is, like I said, is going to bring in the heavier content.
Okay.
I don't know. That's my opinion, but we'll have to see, I guess.
We shall see.
Well, like Maniac, that was a Paramount that got funneled into Netflix.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Those kind, like, my kids would not be nowhere near Maniac. That'd be like, that is probably like Timmy and Mikey repellent.
Well, rightfully so. Not made for them.
Right, exactly. All right, man. How about Intruder?
All right. Speaking of not made for kids, the Intruder.
Well, my kids walk up and they're like, "Oh, Daddy, let's watch that one." I'm like, "Intruder? Like, I don't know." the movie poster itself, I'm like, "I don't know if we should watch this one, buddy. We'll do something else right now," you know?
Bryce said the same thing. Bryce is like, "Oh, I guess this week too." I'm like, "No, buddy. Last week was your week. Now we're doing grown-up stuff."
So if I can look at the movie poster, though, so it says The Intruder.
Yeah.
And then Your House, His Home, and Dennis Quaid. I'm assuming the picture of the eyes is Dennis Quaid.
Yeah.
He looks like an ape.
Really? You think so?
In that? It looks like he's got like ape eyes and there's like black gorilla hair and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. It is dark.
Yeah. It doesn't, like, knowing it's Dennis Quaid, I could see it's Dennis Quaid.
Kind of,
yeah. Like. But it's a stretch. I mean, it looks like you're looking at the ape at the Santa Barbara Zoo or something.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's kind of like the mask of an ape. I put up a new poster in my office. I replaced Deadpool 2 with War of the Planet of the Apes. So it has Andy Serkis's, you know, CG face of Caesar in there. And it's definitely, you're right. It is just like his mask, this the Intruder thing, the Intruder poster.
Yeah, totally. You know, you have like, it's those eyes with the kind of, you know, the black fur, whatever. I don't know. Is it fur, hair, whatever?
It's just like it looks like painted out, you know?
Yeah.
So the eyes are not great, but I like the way that they've trapped Michael, Ellie, and Megan Good in there in the words, the Intruder, you know?
Yeah, I like that.
It kind of has them behind bars of the letters, you know?
A little bit, yeah.
So it's, I thought, that part is neat. The eyes didn't bother me until you brought it up. So thank you.
Yeah. No, the first, you know, because I thought something similar too. It's like the prison bar lighting. Well, not lighting, but the prison bar like lettering, I guess.
Yeah.
And the prison bar lettering kind of says that they're behind behind his bars or whatever. Yeah. Trapped.
Yeah.
But the first thing that struck me when I first saw it, I was like, the Intruder. And I'm like, what, there's an ape breaking in? You know, like, who's the Intruder? The other thing, too, is that I don't care for this movie is I think it steals from too many other movies. Right in the beginning, it's like what we just did with Pet Sematary.
Yeah.
You're rolling up on the house. It's like, oh, here's the beautiful house. Oh, we would love to live here. And then, you know, it all goes south.
Right.
And then, I mean, The Shining, when he comes bursting through the door, I'm just like, here's Johnny. You know, I'm just like, what? You know, it's like they're showing, like, it's like there's Jack.
Here's Johnny.
So that's Dennis Quaid pulling off Jack. And then, you know, the axe to the gut, you know, I mean, that's from The Shining, you know, and I mean, like, there were so many scenes.
It's an homage. It's an homage to.
Yeah, it is, you know. And then you don't know what's going on in the shower, but like, it's kind of like when Jack goes in and he sees the hot woman coming out of the bathtub. Although in that one, then she turns into the like wrinkly old lady.
Right.
But in this, you know, you're looking at Megan Good in the shower, I guess, is who he's going to like go spy on. But yeah, I mean, it just has a few other movies. But yeah, a lot of The Shining. And then my final critique, though, is like, at what point do you just call law enforcement? You know, like you're taking this guy on by yourself and all this, and you got some crazy guy day in, day out, not leaving. You know, he sold you the house. Like, get the law involved. Like, dude, you have a restraining order, you know, like
it feels like that they would have gotten involved. I'm hoping that they figured out how, a little foil, a little way to remove that issue.
Yeah.
So I would say that I would think that they removed it and it's not an issue.
Yeah. And I thought the same, like there's gotta be something that explains it away. But like, if it doesn't, it's like, really, you're not going to like call the police? Like, whatever.
Yeah, they have done that in trailers before where they take like massive plot holes that are easily thought of like that and just plug it up with a little piece of exposition.
Right.
So I totally get that they could have done that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, the other thing I thought too is like, I mean, houses are bought and sold like every day, you know?
Yeah.
Like this had to have happened to somebody. Maybe not to the extreme where the guy's like swinging axes and shooting shotguns at you, but like, this is my house. You're in my house.
No, totally. And it's funny because when you see him acting, did you get like a Harrison Ford thing?
Wait, from Dennis Quaid?
Yeah, Dennis Quaid is hitting me more and more like, I don't know. I don't want to say low rent Harrison Ford because I bet they're both, you know, he's had some great roles. So, but if it feels like he brought some intensity to this role that I haven't seen him necessarily flex in a long time.
Yeah, and he hasn't had nearly the good roles that his brothers had.
Hello, boys! I'm back.
I mean, Randy has had some amazing roles.
Merry Christmas! Dinner was full!
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. So Harrison Ford, though, which role of Harrison Ford?
I'm thinking like Patriot Games. I guess his turn.
Yeah, maybe.
It's just the intensity when he's like...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
When Dennis is like running outside and he's like running at them, that's the one thing that kind of gave me a flash of like a Harrison Ford.
And like he's got the angry grimace.
Yeah, it's like that fugitive kind of ferocity, you know?
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't get it. I see what you're getting at, but I didn't pick up on it, though.
You didn't pick up on it?
No.
Yeah. So I thought it was interesting. I like the idea, and I totally believe that something along this line happened, and I'm sure it was like a little more innocuous than what happened, like the whole mowing your own lawn. You know, after you've sold the house.
Right.
That had to have happened.
Oh, that would totally be my father-in-law, right? He moves out into like the nursing home, but he shows up back on Enfield Drive to like cut the grass. You know, like he just can't let it go. I can totally see that. But overall though, I mean, are you going to watch this? I'm not.
This is not my typical movie.
Too intense for me.
I like the trailer. I like the intensity of the trailer, but it's about as much of a dose as I could take.
Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, we did it not too long ago. What was the one where the black woman was in the house?
Mother's Day. No, what was it called?
No.
Breaking In.
No, it gives me the hint of Breaking In a little bit with what, Gabrielle Union, it was in there? Uh-huh. And for those who are counting, that's episode 9. You can go back and listen. Yeah, I mean... You're at your house or whatever, and someone's trying to get in. You're trying to get away, but in this case, like you bought it, so you live there, so you feel a sense of like, now I own it, so get the hell out of my house. you know, but this guy's like, hey, you're drilling on my house, but it's like, it's not your house anymore. I own the house. And then like, call 911, but they don't do that. Or maybe they will, but who knows?
Well, I think they kind of play with that idea a little bit. And maybe they explain it away when the husband tells the wife is like, I think you're being nice to the old man, you know?
Yeah,
so he wants to call the police and she's like, oh, he's harmless, you know?
Yeah, until he's carrying her up the stairs with a shotgun. All right, man, let's get to a brighter note here and let's talk Clio Awards.
Okay, let's take a break first.
Yeah, let's take a break. All this beer.
Awesome.
If you enjoy our trailer reviews, or even if you hate them, let us know. We love feedback. We're on Twitter at TJunkiesPodcast and Instagram at TrailerJunkiesPodcast. You can also comment on the episodes at TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. Our email is info@TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. And you could also leave us a review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's get back to it. All right, and we're back.
How's your beer hitting you right now?
Oh, no, this beer is amazing. Like, just sipping on it, you know? It's like, I'm going at such a slow pace, I'm not even buzzed. Or not that I could tell. But no, this is like, the flavor is amazing. I mean, with the chocolate nibs and coffee. Okay, so the Clio Awards. I used to watch the Clio Awards in the 80s with my dad, right?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, there's always been the Oscars and the Emmys and all these awards. But, like, maybe a little bit of the Oscars because my mom got into, like, what everybody was wearing and stuff, you know? But, like,
right.
Me and my dad couldn't care less. But we always watched the Clio Awards.
I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah. So the cool thing about the Clio Awards in the 80s was they actually sold like tangible goods.
Really?
You know, like the most funniest, clever ads that you'd die laughing with, because they were always funny at the time, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's how they would win, is like the humor behind them. Well, I don't know if that's how they'd win, but my recollection is they were always humorous.
Those are the memorable ones.
The memorable ones, yeah. And you'd watch them, you know, and it's like at the end, it's like, yeah, buy your Tide or whatever. And you're like, what, really? It's for Tide? But it was a great ad. And a lot of them were like from European and British and all this stuff. But what they do now is, and to give you the rundown of all the different ads, because, you know, you asked that I do a rundown.
Yeah.
So today there are no tangible ads, you know, the commercials or whatever you want to call them. They're, you know, like I said, it used to be like for automobiles, soda drinks or
soap.
I don't know. Soap. Yeah. You're selling soap in the valley. But now it's video games and Deadpool and Netflix and Deadpool, various movie trailers and Deadpool, different TV shows and Deadpool. I mean, it's just all this stuff in Deadpool.
Right.
You know, I mean, the Deadpool ones, though, they are pretty clever. I got to admit that.
Yes.
Yeah, the Ross one and Crass, too.
Oh, and we'll throw the other one. We'll throw the newest one up. It didn't make it for the Clio Awards cut. But did you hear that they're doing a PG-13 Deadpool 2 release?
Oh, no, I didn't. What, are they cleaning it up?
They're recutting it for the Christmas holiday season. And I think it comes out either this weekend or it'll come out soon. And it has Fred Savage in the promo for it. And we might need to take a break and just watch it. Do you want to do it?
Yeah, send me the link.
I'll send you the link.
And then I'll talk about some of my favorite ones really quick.
Do that.
So the Daily Show Trump tweet library.
You like that one?
That one was good. I felt the Stranger Things one was a bit condescending towards Brazil.
Ooh.
As if Brazil's just like some backwards country that doesn't have any, you know, like, oh yeah, they just have like a knob television and one station or something, you know? It's like, I'm sure it's not that bad there. And then there's a number of them, Westworld, Mr. Mercedes, and so on, that they're really not ads for anything. They're more like newsreels that are just telling you what they did.
Right. So that's a very specific kind of marketing piece. It's called the sizzle reel. We do a lot of them.
Yeah.
And that's where you sell the idea of a marketing campaign in a video. And the one big tell about a sizzle reel is any good sizzle reel is going to have a bunch of numbers. It'll have a number of exposure. It'll have a number of, you know, reach. It'll have just like boastful, huge numbers. The bigger number, the bigger the number, the better, you know?
So, okay, with that said, and I don't even, what does Clio even stand for?
I don't even know.
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, so my recollection of the Clio Awards, like from historic memory as a child, as a kid, you know, a teenager, whatever, in the 80s, mm-hmm. watching with my dad, like I said, was always like advertisements, clever and humorous advertisements for products.
Right.
Whatever the products were.
And it would tease you with like something that you would think would be sexy or naughty, and then it would turn really funny.
Exactly. Exactly.
And you're like 13 and you're like, ooh, this is gonna be sexy, and then it's funny.
You know, like Benny Hill. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, like Benny Hill, exactly. So in other words, what you're saying is, though, in the modern sense, and maybe it's always been this way, but in the modern sense, is that the Clio Awards are more marketing campaigns than they are advertisements.
Well, I think like anything, it's like the industry during the 80s, it had to put, I think in what you're talking about, I think is the International Clio Awards, which has always been on, you know, they put it on television and market to it. So that's going to have a different flavor. You know how they have a technical Oscars where they do that the day before or the week before, and then they do all of these technical awards for the Oscars.
Oh, right. I gotcha.
That's the untelevised part of it, and it's kind of like the geek part of it. The Clio Awards has kind of slipped into that space where it kind of lives in the same space as Promax. Promax is another award body, marketing body of vendors and production companies and just a whole bunch of marketing people that get together once or twice a year. And they give each other awards, but it's more of like a mingling session, whole bunch of breakout sessions, different rooms, like Comic-Con for marketing nerds. And I've actually won a silver Promax award. So.
No, you didn't really.
Yeah, I did.
What? Where is this award?
I didn't actually get it because, you know, we worked with Ant Farm, a vendor who did it, who did the production of it. And then it was for college football playoff. And we used Pickle and Peanut, an XD property, to talk about college football playoff and explain it and explain how the breakdown worked. I'll throw a link on there too.
And you didn't go up to the podium and be like, I want to thank.
I wasn't even there. No, I was not at the award show.
Oh man. I was like thinking you went up there and like you had like your 5-minute thank you list.
No. They played music to get me off. Yeah.
I'd like to thank Trailer Junkies Podcast for supporting me in the honor of explaining this award. But okay.
So the Clios are, you know, a space where marketers can get together and all of the trailer houses and everybody can kind of just pat each other on the back.
Yeah, I got you. I know what you're saying. So it's like everybody saying like, hey, you know, you guys have done a good job this year and we recognize you and, you know, your work doesn't go unnoticed, even though you sit in a back room just cutting this stuff together, whatever and whatever.
Right. Yeah. And part of being an agency, like the agency for Deadpool and the agency for all these trailers, is that you kind of don't want to be noticed by your end consumer, because you want your consumer to watch the Deadpool thing. You don't want to say, oh, that was done by, you know, AV Squad, or that was done by Motion. So congrats to the Motion agency. They're 2018's Clio Entertainment Agency of the Year. So I've been around for a long time. And before Motion was called Motion, they were called Craig Murray Productions. And that was kind of cool, but kind of typical, you name a company after yourself and the guy's not there anymore. So you kind of change your name, but they changed your name to Motion. It's spelled MOCEAN. So like the ocean, but with an M on the front of it.
Okay.
But when you say Motion, what do you think? How do you think that's spelled?
Motion?
Yeah.
Well, MOTION.
Right. So I thought, why'd you guys name yourself M ocean, you know, an M followed by the word ocean. It was like, aren't you confusing everybody? But it's worked out. They've kept it for all these years. It's great. They do a lot of stuff with their O. They change their O to a turkey for Thanksgiving. They change it to a wreath or a Christmas tree for Christmas. You know, right now it's, I think it's a wreath. So it's, they've done a lot with the name, and it's kind of been ubiquitous. When I see motion, when I hear motion, I think of the way that motion, the agency spells it, not M-O-T-I-O-N.
Yeah, I gotcha. I gotcha. Yeah, so I'm trying, I was looking up to see if I could find what Clio stands for. I can't find what Clio stands for. I don't think it stands for anything. You know, I think it's just creative excellence in advertising and design.
There you go.
Yeah, but the main thing, so how about we do the Deadpool thing? We'll come back.
Okay.
All right, so we're back from break number two, I guess. We just watched the PG-13 Christmas release of Deadpool, and my first amazing critique that I'm so positive about is that Fred Savage has a Bears shirt on.
The Bears.
The Bears. The Bears.
Yeah, pretty funny. Pretty funny.
Well, he has a bear. He has a bear shirt when he's in the other movie.
What other movie?
The movie Princess Bride.
Oh yeah. No, it looks pretty funny. It's like there's nothing in there that's really Deadpool. And it's typical of the Deadpool, you know, like Ross doesn't say anything about Deadpool other than it's just Deadpool being silly.
Yeah. I think that's their whole marketing campaign, and they stick to the idea of breaking down the fourth wall.
That's their shtick.
And that's the whole shtick. And the whole shtick is that we make fun of ourselves so hard that, you know, you guys laugh too. You know?
Right.
And I love the idea that at a time where Fox is getting folded into the Disney space, that this is yet another thing that Disney could get blamed for, that they don't have a single part in, you know, is like, you know, PG-13 Deadpool. Well, of course they're coming into Disney, and Deadpool's even making Disney jokes. They talk about the lady on the bench. It's like, I loved you in Up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, and then they had the Woody and Buzz Lightyear thing in their, one of their earlier promos. So there's some deep seated, like, poking fun at the new hopefully the new parent company, you know?
So as one who has never seen a Deadpool movie, they break down the fourth wall in a lot of the scenes in the movies.
Yeah, he does. Deadpool talks to the camera a lot.
Okay,
it's more of a Ferris Bueller kind of breaking of the fourth wall.
Yeah, I gotcha. Like Stanley in Three's Company.
Yeah.
Kind of just gives you the wink and nod and then drives on. All right. So what's your feeling on some of the Clio awards? I mean, I kind of gave you my rundown as far as like what I think is good and bad. And
I love the idea of a space where you can see marketing campaigns that you might not be able to get to. You know, I don't go to Comic-Con, but I love the idea of them having the toilet seat covers with Deadpool's face on it.
Right.
You know, and it's talking about the Blu-ray release, and it says dropping. You know what I mean? It was just like, it's again, another great pun, Deadpool not taking itself seriously.
Yeah.
Too much Deadpool, though, I guess you could say, is one thing. I will say that from our Super Bowl stuff, and just to make sure we pat ourselves on the back a little bit, we had the John Malkovich teasing the championship football games.
Yes,
so
awesome.
We definitely talked about that. We called that out as a great marketing piece. And then we also talked about Michael Jordan. And I pulled like the anniversary installation where they put all the screens out. And they recreated all of his winning shots from his career, from college and stuff like that. And it's so great. And they didn't, so it must have been a different agency. But this year in the Clio Awards, the Air Jordan became AR Jordan. And, you know, the eye kind of turned sideways to become the the slash between augmented and reality.
Yeah.
And now it's like completely changed with the times. So back then it was all about tracking your body movement and like creating the space around you. And this augmented reality was exactly the opposite, where it takes the cell phone, it takes your, you know, your cell phone, and it puts Michael Jordan doing his dunk in the real space around you. And then it does this all this awesome linking to the e-commerce, you know, getting it delivered to people with a 2-hour window, you know, wherever they are, you know, with Shopify and with dark shipping or whatever it's called. So I just love the idea of like pushing the envelope, and things need to get recognized, not for being huge successes, but just for pushing the envelope in a space that is constantly evolving.
Yeah, and we covered, like you said, the John Malkovich one, but we also did The Greatest Showman that's also featured here.
That's also in there too. And I was like, why didn't they have this awesome clip when I was looking for clips of it before?
Yeah. I mean, I think somebody is listening to the Trailer Junkies podcast. But overall, though, I mean, I think the thing that disappoints me most is yes, they're marketing and it's for good marketing campaigns and things, but it seems as though like, and again, it could be just my recollection is foggy, but it seems that it's more about marketing pop culture than it is marketing products and services in a sense.
Yeah. I think there's more to market as far as in a service economy that we're in now. There's still products that they're marketing. There's a very cool Apple speaker that they did the Welcome Home ad to, and
yeah.
I brought that into one of our rough cut meetings for work. I don't know if we covered it on Trailer Junkies podcast, but
no, we didn't.
It's a Spike Jones music video, and it won. So they still sell stuff, but you're right. It's far fewer. You know, I don't think that's. I think everybody wants to be groundbreaking and everybody wants to be on the cutting edge. And I think that's what this is now celebrating.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, commodities have been sold for decades, you know, and they're, like you said, it's a service economy. People are looking at, you know, like the Netflix type stuff and movie space and, you know, television and just how can we get, like, there's so much competition in, you know, like the Daily Show, for example, and what it goes up against.
Yeah.
How do we separate ourselves from everything else on television to get you to watch? And that is to have, you know,
installation like, art. It's basically an installation.
Yeah,
piece, right?
Exactly. You know, it's like you have to separate it somehow because it's like us with podcasting. I mean, there's so many podcasts that everybody listens to. How do you get yourself above the water, you know, to just get noticed, you know, yeah. Among the sea of just mediocrity, let's say. And maybe we're part of the mediocrity. I don't know. But no, I mean, but, you know, and I think that's what a lot of it is you're looking at. So like if you look at the mean, right, the average is just going across. And the mean is where everybody's like swimming. And there's just a handful of marketing campaigns that get noticed that just are just a cut above that get these shows and get these movies and video games and stuff out there. Because even in the video game space, there's so many, you know, and how does one video game make it over another one? And maybe it is some of it is marketing, you know, and I don't know.
Yeah. Well, did you see what Skittles did?
Skittles, no.
So Skittles, they did a Super Bowl ad, but then they showed it to one kid. So rather than, you know, like, how do you differentiate? You know, you put together a marketing campaign, and then instead of showing it to as many people as you could show it to, they showed it to a Skittles super fan.
Did they capture the reaction?
Yeah, they did, and they built the marketing campaign around the fact that they weren't going to show the ad. They were only going to show it to him.
Oh, I got you. That brings up a good point, I think, is that when you watch the Super Bowl, I mean, that's kind of like the advertising breakout at the beginning of the year.
Right.
You know, the new Doritos and Pepsi and Budweiser and auto commercials and, you know, whatever it is. And those come out, and those are the commercials that people watch and remember and talk about. And you're looking at either the humor or what moves you emotionally.
Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, we talked about it when we covered those ads, and I think you loved the Australia ad that was kind of, that caught everybody off guard, but it really has awesome legs. You know, right now there's a whole secondary marketing campaign for Australia where they're actually advertising it as see the sets
right
from the commercial campaign. And it's like, all it has to do is show like the beautiful spaces in all around Australia.
Right.
So it is a way to build the buzz into and around the actual piece of marketing that you're doing. So like I said, with the Skittles thing, the reason that it's a sizzle that they show in this, in the Clio Awards, is it talks about the number of impressions, you know, the number of markets that did stories on the idea that this marketing campaign was focused around one person, and that one person became famous 3 weeks before the Super Bowl, and he's, you know, his Twitter feed got flooded, and he's everybody's friend, you know what I mean? Because everybody wants to see what the new Skittles ad was, to see how he was going to react to it. So
hilarious.
I think that's the way people are trying to. About 2 years ago, I guess, the big thing was, how do we make this go viral? So that's been kind of the catchphrase for about 2 to 3 years ago, everybody wanting to go viral.
You're engineering a virus.
Right. But then recently, this past year, that's kind of been shed away by, you know, YouTubers and like all the people that Audrey follows. And that's why this year's buzzword has become authenticity. So it's kind of the backlash to the forced virality. And, you know, now people are trying to thread this needle of this authentically viral space.
Yeah, I could see that. Like, you've engineered it, and now you're trying to say, well, this is really genuine. We didn't engineer anything.
Right. We engineered it. We know it is. But hey, there's a real person at the core of this thing.
Yeah.
And that person's response is, he's not an actor. He's a guy who likes our product, and we're going to support him liking our product. And now let's see what happens.
You know what I mean? Right. So, final thing.
Yeah.
The Daily Show Trump Twitter library.
Yes, you love that one.
I did. Before we mosey out of here.
Yeah.
Did you pause it and read everything on the screen as they were splashing, you know, and...
No, I let it just wash all over me.
I did that the first time. I'm like, all right, and you know, you're like, okay, I got to go back. And then I pause. I'm like, I got to read all this stuff. I mean, it's pretty funny. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, but when they say we have a president who doesn't read.
What's that?
No, there was like, they're sitting there like, well, we did this this Trump Twitter library because we know he doesn't read. I'm just like, oh man, like it's just scathing, you know?
Oh,
it was good. It was good. And the way they do it,
pause it all.
Yeah. And they have the virtual museum and stuff. And I mean, like, if you didn't know any better, you'd think this place was real. You know, I mean, it was well done. All right, man.
So was that your favorite?
I think so. I think that was my favorite. I think, you know, there was too many Deadpools, although I do like the Bob Ross one.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix is a joke. Okay. You know, I think the one that was funny is when Chappelle is like, all right, my turn, you know, because he wanted to get thrown. But other than that, though, I mean, you know, some of them we saw, you know, the John Malkovich and stuff we saw. The Stranger Things, nah, you know, the South by Southwest Westworld. I thought what they did was really cool, but as a marketing piece, like you said, I mean, they're trying to hit all these numbers and stuff. That was too marketing nerd for me, I guess.
Too much of that. There was one that was for Mr. Mercedes, and I just thought it was a funny sizzle because it did get a lot of impressions. It put cell phones with like 60 days worth of service in the hands of Hollywood reporters and entertainment reporters, and then it pushed messages out to them from characters within the show.
Right.
And I thought that was really interesting, really awesome, you know, forward thinking, what's the cost? It's like Android phones. You skin it with the show. You let people use it like a burner phone for 60 days, and you send out, what, 500 of them? I don't even know how many they did. But it said it was the highest rated, you know, AT&T DirecTV show on their network. And I was like, but they haven't put like five shows out. So it's not hard to be the best.
Right. That's like when Netflix had their first couple of original content. You're like, it's the best original content they ever put out. But yeah, they only had three, you know? So, all right, man. Well, hey, cool. It was a little bit different this week. We had a bunch of different conversations about a lot of stuff. I mean, we covered so many topics.
Yeah.
The Intruder being the only trailer, though, this week. So that's kind of cool. I like the little bit divergence in format.
We are still the Trailer Junkies.
Oh, yeah. Podcast, yeah, but we get into all kinds of marketing and all kinds of stuff and, you know, movies, TV space, and you name it.
And if you don't like it, let us know.
There you go. If you like it,
let us know. Let us know anything, anywhere. And who knows, if you write a review, a nice 5-star review for us, not that you would write anything less than a 5-star review, but we definitely... gets you a chance to read it on air.
Definitely. So
how did your beer finish off?
Oh, I'm still sipping on it, but man, it is still amazing. It's like gotten better as it's warmed up a little bit.
Oh, nice. A little more flavor profile.
Yeah. How about the Prankster?
The Prankster's good. I'm not, I guess.
You're not a Belgian guy.
Huge Belgian fan. It is a good golden ale.
You gotta like the fruity esters, you know, that the yeast puts off.
Yeah, it has a citric kind of nice profile to it, so I do like that.
Yeah.
But it's not a, I don't think it's a good sitting beer. Like, I have a little bit left, and I'm like, I don't know. I like it cold.
Yeah. No, I'd have to say, though, this Imperial Stout, like, it's gotten chocolatier. It's gotten more coffee in flavor. It's like creamy. I mean, it's like, it's full bodied. I mean, it's amazing, you know. And I have no affiliation with these people at all. I mean, but Third Window in Santa Barbara, you know, and this is more or less local, to 2018 Salusa Secundus Imperial Stout. So anybody who could get their hands on one, highly recommended, man. This is definitely a solid sipper. You know, you're like, we've been at this for an hour and I would say I still have some left. Like, you're not pounding these things, you know? I mean, stick the bottle nipple on there and just start suckling. Yeah. All right, Ted. Well, that's it, man. The people that stayed to the end got the best phrase, I think.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you too. Happy Thanksgiving. Wish everybody the best and hope you don't have to wrangle too many kids from work.
Awesome. Have a good night.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.